Hello and welcome to Convos and Cocktails, where we talk, you engage, and we all get to drink. I'm your host, Lesego Tlhabi, and I'm ready to wine a little and laugh a lot with our guest. And today's episode, we have Penny Osiris, aka my mother, in studio. And we'll be discussing the dynamics of mother-daughter relationships. You guys did send questions in, so it's actually maybe more of like a mom and daughter Q&A. Or like specific to us. But yes, hi Ma.
Hi Sikho.
Hi you.
I'm good, and you?
I'm good. What's your cocktail of the day and why this?
Okay. My cocktail is Care Royale.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really a big cocktail person, but I am a champagne person. So this cocktail has champagne and it's got raspberry liqueur and don't know what else.
Oh, that's good enough for me. So it's very fancy. Very
and of
pretty.
Course it's pink. My favorite color, so everything I like.
This is true. Cheers. Welcome to the episode. You can see I do work. Okay, so I want to ask you some questions both of us can answer, because I think the people of Instagram did ask for both of us. But the first question is for you. So it says, this question is a bit specific. It says, what was she craving when she was expecting you? But I just want to speak about the journey of pregnancy for you just in general. You, obviously, I'm your first child.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like? Were you expecting me? Was it an accident?
It was an oopsie. I just graduated from medical school, mm-hmm. and was working as an intern at Barra. And for those who know what it's like to be an intern, the long hours you work
mm-hmm.
and the just intensity of the work. It's not something I would have planned.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was hard. I mean, of course, I was in a good, steady relationship 5 years in. So it's not like it was like a panic. It was just a little earlier than I would have wanted it, but it's no big deal. I mean, it did make my internship quite hard because the long hours and working at Barra in casualty. Yeah,
but I'm an intern. That's new information for me.
You have to be an intern to be a doctor.
I didn't know you were an intern at the time I was born. Not that you were ever an intern, obviously. You're an intern. Anyway, the other question is, what is your age difference? My mom had me when she was 24, so y'all can do the math. Okay, we want to know what Lesego was like as a baby.
Oh, the sweetest, actually. I always tell people that. The easiest baby. I think she understood that. Her mother was stressed being an intern, and I could leave you with anyone. You were, and I could take it to parties, actually. My friends remember that.
You see.
Would take it to a party, and you would just sit there and be content. You were really, really an easy baby. You slept. I took you to crèche quite early because, babysitting and those kind of things were quite difficult then.
Mm.
But really, really an easy baby.
And now you can also understand why I like parties, because it's what I was first exposed to as a child. So.
Okay, that's your story.
Yeah, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
Okay, so I've tried to group these questions in terms of categories, but like, whatever, if we go this way and then that way, we go this way and that way.
Also, just don't just ask questions. What about just what you want to know?
No, for sure. I mean, I've got some stuff I want to know. But also, some of the things I've already known, some of these questions, I'm using them because I want to know the answer. I think, like, I ask you what I want to ask you all the time anyway. But anyway, I thought there are some lots of questions that were asked that I didn't decide to use because they were irrelevant. Anyway, this one I wanted to know. What was mom up to at Lesego's current age? Are there any similarities between 33-year-old Lesego?
No.
33-year-old. Yeah, you couldn't have been quicker to answer.
No similarities at all.
They could be.
Okay, let me see if they are. But the differences are so stark and so obvious. I mean, I had two kids when I was 33.
Mm-hmm.
I just left clinical practice. I just joined a corporate, Transnet. I was overwhelmed.
Okay.
I was overwhelmed. And just also the other stark difference is just how I think you are confident and you know yourself and you are clear about who you are and you just feels like you are much more confident and in your place in the world. That wasn't my story. It took much longer than that. I mean, it was closer to age 40 that I thought I was beginning to figure things out. So, yeah, those are the stark differences, is that I look at you and Fancy, and just in terms of how confident Fancy. You are and how you engage with the world and how you have a voice, you are clear about demanding your needs and articulating your needs and being, yeah, it's just so different from where I was at 33.
So what do you think, because you said that you just came into that kind of space when you were closer to 40, so was there a significant event or situation that made that happen, or was it just getting older?
It was just getting older, and of course I got divorced just before my 40th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So that took me down a path of trying to understand myself, because I really do believe that up to then, I mean, great things had happened to me. I had great jobs, I had beautiful children, I'd also gotten married, you know, and from the outside it really did look like I had it figured out.
Yeah,
I think just as I was approaching my 40th birthday, I just got a deep sense of, I suppose, of identity crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I lost myself a lot in being a mom and being a wife, and just didn't quite get to grips with what I really wanted. But my 40th birthday approaching really made me panic and kind of like, is this all there is to my life?
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like there was a lot that I still needed to do in terms of just finding out who I was and what I believed my value was, and just my identity and who I was, what I was passionate about, what I valued. You know, I do believe that it got much better after my mid-40s, and mm-hmm. in fact, I think my 50s have been my best in terms of coming into my own, understanding myself.
I love that for you.
Yeah, and just being in the way in which I really have a lot of confidence mm-hmm. in myself and my value and who I am, what I stand for, what I'm passionate about, and what I want the rest of my life to be about.
Okay, so before we get into the divorce, because there were some questions about that, with confidence, because now you raised me and Fancy, and you just described us as super confident and sure of our place in the world, and maybe that wasn't something that you got into until much later. So obviously, I don't think it was by mistake. I think motherhood, and I mean mothering, and the way you mothered had a lot to do with how we are today. So how do you think, because there are some people who also ask for advice on raising independent women. Was there a formula?
No.
Or like, how do you get two women who are so self-assured, so strong? Not to say there aren't weaknesses or whatever, but just confident women, if that was something that maybe you feel like you struggled with.
I suppose I would have to think about that, because in the beginning, I actually don't think it's anything I did. But I do know that at a certain point, I made a decision that I became a little bit more conscious and more intentional about what I wanted you guys to learn from me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I want you to learn from me, and maybe it's one of the things I try to example, it's courage.
Yes.
So, and you know, one of the things I say all the time is we can do hard things.
Mm.
So for me, it's in the way I've lived my life, maybe even in from my 40s and onwards, maybe when because I did do therapy for a long time, and then have been very intentional about my own self-development, about my own emotional growth and spirituality. So then I do think that that's translated in the way I parent. I became a little bit more conscious and more intentional about the lessons I'd want you to learn from me. And one of them is courage. The other one is having a voice. The other one is, a lot of it is around courage, because, I mean, I really do buy into Maya Angelou's quote that says courage is the most important of all virtues, because without courage, it's impossible to practice all the other virtues consistently.
Yeah.
So for me, courage, and also
damn.
To...
We're 11 minutes in and that's already what you're saying.
But also the other side of it is, I've been thinking about it, and one thing I like about both of you, but maybe you in particular, because your career path is so undefined. You are kind of pioneering something that There's no holy grail. There's no what is it? They call it a beaten path where you can just follow. Is that it's I try to, so in my mind, I don't want girls that are logical and practical and you know, reasonable, because the world is very hard on girls, and so you have to be, in my opinion, I would want even the women that I'm attracted to, and in terms of just who inspire me, are the women who are seen to be unreasonable, who are illogical, who are impractical, who are doing things that you wouldn't expect women, especially women of a certain age, to do. You know, so when I look at you guys and see just how bold you are and audacious you are, I really do believe that the universe does reward audacity. So I like it. I like that you are so audacious in the way you pursue your goals. You are bold. You put yourself out there at this age. I think I'm only doing it now, and sometimes I need a little kick from you to say, "Mom," you know. So it's something. It's always a work in progress for us.
I mean, for me, if you're saying that the stuff only happened kind of towards your 40th, I was like 16 at the time, so I don't feel like that can develop that late.
It does actually. This around 15 and 16 is a very defining age, especially for girls. So I do think that, I mean, of course, some of it could have happened unconsciously. Mm-hmm. I do think that I've tried to live my life in a courageous way. Firstly, because in my 30s, when I turned 32, I left private practice and went into the corporate world, and I knew nothing about it. But also, if you look at my career and my career choices, I've always gone into spaces that I have no business to be in.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, now I'm in private equity. As a doctor, people will say, like, what do you know about that space? But also
as a black woman going into corporate.
Black woman going into corporate, in my corporate roles, being usually the only black woman around a board table or at an exco table. Just, you know, so I suppose unintentionally, in the beginning, have lived my life in a very bold and, I suppose, courageous way. Even though inside, of course, I would be dying, but I've tried to do that.
Yeah.
But it became much more intentional in my late 40s and now in my 50s.
Okay, so let's move into something a bit tougher, I think. Maybe, I don't know, because we've never spoken about it publicly. But obviously, you said when you were 40, you then made the choice to get divorced. I don't know, what was the decision behind that? I mean, say as much as you want to say, or don't at all, but just
I don't know how much I want to say about that, because of course a divorce involves two people. So I don't know how much. I will just say that my when I was approaching my 40th, but first and foremost, I do know that now that I understand what it takes to be a wife and to show up as an adult in a relationship, in terms of understanding how to communicate your needs, how to just be fully present in a marriage. I suppose in the beginning, it wasn't clear for me what my role was, but now I understand it. I understand that as far as wives are concerned, I may not have been the best. Not because of any other reason other than the fact that I knew very little about myself.
Yeah.
I did not know how to show up in the world in the most adult way. And being clear about my needs and being clear about... also just, I'm much more gracious now. I know that I'm much more... I'm kinder. I'm more generous. I'm more... caring and more nurturing. I suppose the fact that we got married young and then pursued very intense careers, then had children, I do think that we each got lost in that, in even prioritizing ourselves, even as a couple. So I just think it's a story I hear over and over again amongst young people, just not understanding how you communicate, how you listen with them without being defensive, listen with courage, and listen compassionately to your partner, and just being able to sometimes put yourself in their shoes. You know, what it takes to maintain a long-term relationship is just a deep interest in the other person.
Yeah.
Being able to listen without being defensive, being able to communicate. And I don't think anybody teaches us that. Mm. I mean, we all come into marriages with baggages and traumas and childhood things that we've learned that may not be the best for long-term relationships, ability to forgive, ability to also see when you are being triggered by your own stuff and not dumping it on the other one and accusing the other of doing things. Not even coming into marriages with these expectations that are so difficult to fulfill, expecting this other person to make you happy. In the meantime, you are the
comes from within.
Exactly, it's an inside job.
Yeah.
So for me, I just think all of that just collided in making our marriage not to succeed, or at least from my part, to just feel like there definitely is more to it. But now I know that it started with me, my own whatever I was bringing to the party in terms of my own baggage, my own unresolved traumas, my own, just all of that. So now I know that what it takes to make a relationship to succeed and to thrive is that you have to bring your whole self.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be committed to your own development. You have to create a safe space for the other to bring their whole self, to be who they are, but also commit to a journey of growing together and helping each other to grow. But marriage for me today means something completely different than it did when I was 24 years old.
Okay, so the other question that I saw was, how did your children help you through that period? I don't know, when you were getting divorced, and how did your mom help you as kids through that period?
My mom didn't.
No, to me. How did you help us go through this? And how did
I actually we don't
help
think
you?
That every time I look back on that period, I do think that I actually did not do a great job. Firstly, because I don't.
I disagree.
Okay, so you tell me about your experience. So if I were to do something similar today, I think I would talk to you more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that because my divorce, firstly, it was not as a result of, I suppose, the things that people would expect, like there was no cheatations, no abuse, no, you know, kind of like it's just something of slowly growing apart, because exactly of what I said, that we just forgot to take care of this thing that was so precious. We just forgot to we just forgot to prioritize it and to grow together and all. So it wasn't like there was a big crisis and then now we needed to, so the story was harder to articulate to people, but most of all to kids, to my children, in terms of saying this is the reason. But I just knew that I needed to do this. It became clearer with 5 years of therapy. It became clearer to myself what I was missing, and what my contribution to it was, and what I would do differently. In fact, in the beginning, I just did not want to get married at all again, because to me it just felt like I didn't understand how you could make it work. I was in that relationship for 20 years, and it was sad when it ended, because 20 years with somebody, and a friendship, if nothing at all. But
sorry.
I would show you my feelings, because I think one of the criticisms that I've heard you and your sister say is that you never saw me cry.
Yeah.
But what I committed to was to be strong for you guys, because it's hard. It's like it's kind of like the rug has been taken out. Pulled from under your feet, and you kind of get I could see how hard this was for you too. It really was. You were shattered by it, so
yeah.
I wasn't going to make it worse by crying in front of you. And of course, emotions don't come easy to me. I always say
Well, I cry enough for everyone in the family, yeah, so it's fine.
They don't come easy for me. I just learned as a child to just bury my emotions. I don't, only now am I, you know, becoming very friendly towards my, I welcome them, I feel my feelings, but it's not something I grew up with. So that, coupled with the fact that I was intent on protecting you guys, I don't know from what, means that I didn't share with you some of my vulnerabilities. Also, I don't know how much you share with the children, because also the kids,
our children
have our children. They have to continue to love these adults. The parents are not divorcing the kids. They are divorcing each other. So
yeah.
There's,
I mean,
so much you can say.
From my feedback, if that's the question, I would say you did a really great job. I do think, obviously, we've spoken about it, that just in general, over my entire life, not really seeing you be very vulnerable sometimes made my over vulnerability feel like a weakness. But I feel like you guys, you told me before, I think, Vince and stuff. So I do think that you communicated as much as you could with me. I also was in boarding school. But I think one of the things that I always communicate wherever I go is how amicable it seemed. I mean, there were moments where it was a bit tough in the beginning when we moved out, in terms of like speaking to each other nice or like happily, but wherever I go, I feel like I would take you guys for like one of those public speaking motivational things on how to do co-parenting or how to make it as amicable as possible, because we didn't see I think it was also why it was a shock. I didn't see it coming, but we also didn't see any real, you know, beef or anything like that afterwards. It was, as I think you guys try to make it as easy as possible, and you both, like, you're commending your maturity, because I've been in relationships maybe where there's a child, and sometimes it's been a bit difficult between the parents, and I've always wanted to emulate what I saw if I ever dated someone with a child or ever had one. God forbid, but if I ever had one, that it would be as amicable as, you know, the way you, Reedy, Khalil, and Brian have made it. So that for me, I think trumps everything else in terms of like, oh, you could have cried more, you could have spoken.
I think we are both
more.
Very nice people.
You are very nice people.
you're so sometimes
you are very nice people.
Nice people that don't necessarily have to be together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But how was it behind the scenes? Was co-parenting actually difficult and you just made it work?
Not at all, actually. I think because we've got similar values in terms of family and family first. Mm-hmm. Co-parenting was not hard at all.
Oh, so it's very important who you have a baby with.
Exactly. Much more important than who you get married to. Mm. Who you have a baby, because the bond lasts for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So you have to be particularly careful about that.
But do you have advice for other moms? Because they're asking, you know, some people have asked, does your mom have pearls of wisdom on co-parenting and how to make it as amicable or as beautiful as can be, given how difficult it is already?
I think most people try to continue fighting the battles that they were fighting, mm-hmm, through the kids, and I think it's unfair. So for me, I understood that this is very hard on my kids, so the last thing I want is to make it worse by temper tantrums and all sorts of performances and whatever. So I made a commitment that I will make it as easy as possible for the kids. So there was a lot of, you swallow your pride, you can't have egos here.
Yeah.
You do what's best for the child. That's all. Just prioritize your child's happiness. Already they are dealing with a lot. Mm. Dealing with a divorce is hard. And trying to navigate these two parents and their new lives. So the last thing they need is to be made, what do you call when,
like, collateral damage?
Collateral damage. But also to be used to fight to settle scores. So for me, I knew that I would make it very easy for you guys, whatever it takes. Even if I have to close the door and scream, if I have to do something. But if it's what I needed to do for your guys' happiness, and I will do it. And fortunately, my ex-husband also had the same attitude. He made it easy. There was
shout out, Dad.
Yeah, he made it easy. And then our new partners also, just amazing people who just understood that
the assignment.
Okay,
so the other question was also, how did we help you? Personally, I don't know how I did. I think I actually made it more difficult. But
I will tell you how you made it easy. I actually think maybe it's a testament to the fact that you did a great job in raising you guys. There really was no, you know,
some kids
go through a thing where they are angry with their parents and there's a lot of shouting and there's a lot of conflict. That, in fact, I actually think you both did the exact opposite of that. I kind of felt like you were trying so hard to make it easy. You know, even with meeting new partners, you would try your best.
Some of it didn't work.
but not because of you guys. You really, for me, I think you were trying so hard to just be easy, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened.
That's hilarious. No, what I was going to say is, because what I remember is being difficult, actually, to be honest. I mean, most of the time I was at St. Anne's, so I couldn't really have the space to, like, wild out like that. But, I mean, soon after that, I think I started piercing my tongue, and then I think I started going out. And, I mean, not as much as I could, because, again, I was at boarding school. But that's when I started
not
experimenting
more than
with alcohol.
Most kids.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's
except
actually
for
a
the
surprise.
Except for the hickey.
Jesus.
I've seen parents who struggled with their teenage kids. I am not.
Well, hickeys also, by the way, were not wild. I wasn't being wild. Some of my friends were like, and I'm not calling out, I mean, not my current friends, but were sexually active in high school. So a hickey is still. Okay? Please. but yeah, I just felt like I was very difficult at that time. So I'm glad to.
I'm not really glad to hear that I wasn't really.
That's actually a surprise. Okay, so how did our relationship evolve over the years, you know, in terms of how close we are now? Were we always close? I mean, obviously, I know the answer. Well, actually, we have two different perspectives, but how do you think our relationship has evolved since I was young to now?
I suppose I would love to hear your perspective on it. For me, I've always said this to my friends. I actually think I do better with adult kids than I did with younger kids, and maybe that's a reflection of my state of mind and state of being when you were younger. I just felt overwhelmed and stressed and just not fully present for the experience. As I did the work on myself, and I think I was presenting myself differently, I was showing up differently for myself as well as for you guys. I mean, I know I'm controlling, but I do want to know which mom is not.
Whoa!
You know, I suppose.
That's a word.
Exactly. I know everything there is to know. So.
And that's something you've also given to us. So I feel like that must be difficult to, like, because I've seen it now. I've seen it in Fencer. I've seen it in myself. I remember the one time I had an ex-partner come with us to, I think it was your wedding or Christmas or something. And I don't know if my grandmother was saying something to my grandfather in that sort of controlling-ish way. And then I think at some point, maybe it had been with you and me, but he just turned and he was like, oh, is this like forever? Like it's from your grandmother and your mom and you. I was like, oh no. Oh no. This thing that I've struggled the most with, I'm becoming.
No, but I suppose the control is
I think it's an anxiety thing.
I was going to say it's just a manifestation of anxiety and fear. And so, you think you can protect your children from even the consequences of their own decisions and their own choices.
Yeah.
And once I learned that, actually, I needed to relax. Firstly, because looking at my own life, it's not like I was always conscious about the choices I was making. But I think it has turned out relatively well. So I had to trust that your own journeys will take you to where you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you will learn the lessons that you need to learn. You will make the mistakes and you won't die. You will survive them. You will then learn from them. So I've decided, at some point I decided, actually, I must not try to control things I can't control. And in fact, I must allow you guys to make your own mistakes. I must not try to rescue too soon and to have a view about a lot of things. And I think that also came with you being so assertive about your own career and what you wanted to do. I mean, in my mind, it was unclear how you were going to make money and how you were going to, you know, make a career out of this. But at some point, I had to just say, you know what? Let me support this. Let me see.
Yeah.
And of course, you figured out a way to make it work. So I've learned a lot, even through being a mother to you guys, to just learn to say,
they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, trust God, trust the universe. They will learn the lessons they need to learn. Some of it will be hard, but you won't die. In fact, I've also had to learn some very hard lessons of my own, and they were good for me in the end, because I emerged a much better person, a much wiser person, much more caring and generous and compassionate person because of all my life experiences. So it's to just, I think how our relationship has evolved is that I've actually decided to step out of the way and to just...
Well, I wouldn't say you're out of the
not
way, but
completely,
you've yielded.
But on the whole, I've one of my friends would say you sit on your hands. So I've learned to just sit on my hands sometimes and just observe. And even though my whole body is screaming no, it's just trust the process, trust the journey. I don't even know. Actually, that's the other thing. My husband has helped me to realize that he'd always, so how do you know that it's not, it's wrong? You know, I can only I can only know from my experiences, and my experiences are very limited. A girl from Umlazi, you know, can you imagine how limited my own experience, life experiences are? And to use that to make a judgment call about your life, you know, so it has made me realize that there's much more that I don't know than what I know. Even what is relevant, what was relevant in the past, I mean, may not necessarily be the careers of tomorrow. So how do I know?
Yeah, I think for me, what has evolved in our relationship has been how close we are. I mean, also, I don't know how close a child can really be to an adult mother. I mean, you can be like, yay, cute, love her. But I feel like where I was a teenager and things like that, like I was much... You knew nothing about my life. Let me just say that. Like, well, you knew nothing. And I feel like as I've gotten older, you are the first person I tell a lot of things to. Even the things that I feel like you might not agree with, you might not, you know, support necessarily, you are the first person that I tell.
You do. Did you tell your friends that you did tell me before you lost your virginity? You had decided to do that. Yes, you did.
I understand, but why would you bring
it?
Why would you say it?
Because I was shocked.
Obviously, I didn't make it like a conscious decision.
But I'm just saying, the reason why I'm saying it is I couldn't have imagined myself saying that to my mom. So first and foremost, it was very... I was happy about it.
That I told you.
That you did. And that you had thought about it. That it was not... Because most girls are coerced into it. Mm-hmm. It is... It's not your plan. It is not in your own timing. It's just... All of it just happened.
Okay, so I came to you and I said, what?
You called me because you were at UCT or something like that.
No, I was different at Vets.
At Vets, yeah. But you called.
Yeah.
And you said, this is what I've decided to do because I'm... I'm the last one of all my friends, and this whole thing about this virginity thing, it's making it so big. So I just think I will do it with a friend. You said that, and there will be no expectations. You had thought it through, and you were telling me. I was just listening, you know. And
was so
exactly. Smart. And then I remember just thinking, oh wow, I'm so proud of. I mean, after I'd gotten over my shock that you tell me that, I just thought, I was so proud just how thoughtful you were about it, that you were doing it in your own timing. And it was your choice, and yeah, that you had thought about it and everything from HIV to pregnancy, you know, you just felt like you knew what you were doing.
Can I tell you why also it's been so easy to tell you stuff that like maybe other people wouldn't tell their moms? Is because, so just for context, there was an incident when I was in grade 10, but it was just before school started. My friend had a farewell party at his house, and I was going to St. Anne's, which was a different school, from Red Hill, which was where I was at. And then I was introduced to tequila. I didn't know it was something that you take as like a shot once every like 10 drinks. I was drinking it as if it was the main drink, and being in grade 10 and not having had alcohol really before, it was obviously... Anyway, fast forward, it was a disaster. My mom was called to the house. I was like passed out in the shower. she took me home. I think I threw up in the bed like two or three times. She had to change. Like, it was just, it was a big, big deal. And it was a big mess. Fast forward to my mom trying to call Tara.
I did not try to call. I called Tara and I told them
she called
that
the
my
rehab,
daughter's alcoholic.
On the first time being drunk. And they were also like, ma'am, it's the first time. So it's not a thing yet. But if she does it again, bring her for like weekends, and then we'll have to inform the school that, you know, every few weekends she has to come. And so it was a really big thing. I'm laughing now because we're over this hump. But it was terrible. And it was just very bad. And my parents both were like not speaking to me and things like that. But then on the way to St. Anne's, which was like 2 or 3 days after that incident, my mom started, because we drove with another mom and her daughter who's also going for the first time, and she was like kind of making jokes about it. My mom's thing is like too soon. I always say that, so I'm like, mama, too soon. So she was already making jokes about it and kind of like, I mean, I was still punished. The next holiday I wasn't allowed to go out when I got back to Joburg, but the way she treated it was like not as I was a criminal, I mean, other than the rehab call. But after that, she was very understanding. And I feel like my perspective then was like, I can make mistakes and I will be in trouble and I will be punished accordingly. But at the same time, she'll understand and she'll forgive. And who else? But because also I was really pissed off at my friends for calling you, to be honest, because that wasn't supposed to happen. But it was also like, then you took me home and I was safe. So also, if you're in a bind, whether or not you think you're going to get in trouble, I need to call you. So that's why I started being open with you, because I was like, if anything happens trouble-wise, yes, you'll shout at me, but you will also be the one who will make things better quicker than any 16-year-olds will be able to do.
So, good.
Yeah. What was that experience like for you?
Horrible.
Because I actually don't think we've
no,
spoken
I mean,
about
it was terrifying because, I mean, you know me and my relationship
hell, guys.
With alcohol. I'm quite judgmental.
Mm.
Mainly because I grew up with a sibling who had problems with alcohol. So for me, yeah, I'm triggered by alcohol. I'm triggered by drunkenness.
Yeah.
So I know that I did. I had to actually sit down and coach myself out of overreacting, because I really was going there. I was really triggered. So I do know that even now, you always tell me, Mom, don't. I mean, I suppose I'm always trying to tell you, don't drink, don't take shots, don't do this. My relationship with alcohol is still not
as comfortable.
As comfortable as, yeah. But also, the boy's mom, in whose house we were at, just, you know, allayed my fears, you know, says, oh, we all did this, Penny. Just, you know, white people, they drink at 15. She says, you know, so by the time I left the house, I was much calmer. She just said, just make sure she doesn't choke on her vomit and just let her sleep it off. She'll be fine, you know. So it was, yeah, I think I had to grow up. And, of course, I was helped by other people around me. Caucasians.
Okay. In terms of like the stuff that we, because we haven't spoken about fights. Now, a lot of questions have also been like, do you guys fight?
Yes, we do.
Can I finish my question? And what do you, how do you fix when you have a fight?
Oh, it's always me going to her room and saying, I'm sorry, Sejo.
The lies. Mom? No ways. So first of all, my mom has this thing that she thinks is a running joke, where she'll come in after a fight and say, even if she was wrong, and say, I forgive you. It's so annoying. It is so annoying. But it does break the ice, because I can be quite
intense.
I can hold on to stuff for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does. My mom is, I think you'd be more than apologizing, you just become funny.
Mm.
I don't know if you, like, we do.
No, also I do. We do.
When,
I do
when
apologize.
It's genuinely yeah. wrong, or like when things are genuinely happening, we definitely do apologize. But I'm saying,
yeah, I think we've gotten better. I know we've gotten better, because I would say, firstly, I would understand when I was triggered and maybe reacted from a place of being triggered rather than on what. In fact, me and you always talk about the fact that when the response or the reaction to something is much
really
more
vague.
Intense
yeah.
than the what's going on, there's always something behind it other than what's on the surface. So I always take my time, and in fact, it's what something I've learned from my husband.
Your husband.
Mrs. Husband. He's amazing.
Every day, my husband.
Amazing.
God,
but one of the things he's been quite, he's deliberate about is reflecting and taking responsibility for his actions. So he's taught me that, to just go back and say, so what was I thinking? Why did I react like that? What triggered me? Instead of saying, Sikho did this to me, it's just go inward and say, so what was going on for me?
What
triggered me in that? Why did I react that way? And so I always do that, and I always find the answer. And then I'll come to you and say, actually, the reason why I reacted the way I did is because of this. What you did maybe triggered something. So it's just owning my stuff and then apologizing for overreacting.
I think also something that you always say to me specifically, because I think I struggle with it, is taking the benefit of the doubt. So you always say, in this house and in this family, people love each other. We love each other. So our first thing, when you think someone has done something to hurt you, is, could it possibly be that I am not giving them the benefit of the doubt and that I'm misreading a situation from my place of trauma rather than understanding that it's a misunderstanding?
Yeah, because the first assumption should be to assume the best possible reason. You know, rather than going to the worst, because that's what you do. It's like you think, you take the worst possible interpretation, and that takes you down a rabbit hole, and we can't get you out of it. So and that's why I always say, sometimes if you don't understand, rather ask.
Yeah.
Let's say, this is what I think you were saying, is that right? Because
we definitely have the tools. Sometimes we're not able to apply them as quickly.
We always come back.
Quite quickly. But I'm just saying, we do fight.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
And then we argue, and then you
go to your room and you don't talk to me. And then I come.
And then you also do the same, girl. We're not going to. It's fight on radio. So how do you manage uncomfortable conversations with each other?
I think the two of us,
can I just ask this? It's because the question is leading onto another. So someone said, if you were ever pregnant, would you tell your mom?
Why don't you tell the story? Because of course you have.
Of course, yes, I have. I was not even, why are you outing me like I was not going to speak about it? The reason why I asked this question is because I was willing to talk about it. I would never ask something I'm not willing to. But when I did fall pregnant, I think it was like 7 years ago now, maybe, or six. My mom was the first person I told. More so because she was there when I found out and I couldn't really hide my reaction. But also because at some point I would have told her. Because I know, again, as much as it would have been a conversation that might have not have been that great in the beginning, Oksalayo, she was the only one who was going to really be able to help me solve the issue, which for me was an issue. You know, some people it's a blessing and I get it and yay. But for me, I didn't want to continue with the pregnancy. So I did tell my mom, and it was very... I think there was like 5 seconds of like slight disappointment in your eyes, I think, but really you had a great reaction, and it was more about like, okay, and what do you want to do? And I was like, the soaps. And I think at some point you even tried to convince me to not do it, and I was like, no.
I didn't. I just said, just think about it. You don't have to make the decision now, but whatever you decide, we'll support you. So we slept on it a little bit, and then you still said this is what you wanted to do.
No, I was very sure about that. I mean, I can't even imagine having a six-year-old now. Like, where would I even be able to go? Like, the things that I want to do next year, I just feel like it would be super impossible. So it was a difficult time, and it was a difficult decision, but it was the very much right decision.
But have you answered the question?
Yes, no, we haven't. I was going to go back into it. This lady, controlling. How do you manage awkward and uncomfortable conversations with each other?
I think both you and I use humor to divert or what?
Deflect.
But we always come back.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, we'll laugh it off and try and make a joke of it, but in the end, we do. Sometimes the first time around, there'll be a lot of screaming and not listening and not, but then, sleep on it. And in the morning, we always find each other. We really always find each other.
Yeah. I think for me, I do see the like less judgmental. Like I feel like there's a lot of things like you might be controlling sometimes in some decisions, but I really do feel like with a lot of things, you are super unjudgmental. Even if you're screaming inside your head, you don't really let it be known. So I think the uncomfortable, awkward conversations are easy because I feel like the ear, even if it's not maybe listening right now, because there might be pushback or a bit of defensiveness from both sides. It's like, I know you go and meditate on it, or like Khalil.
Speak to Khalil. Comes,
and he like solves for X. But yeah, so one of the other questions I wanted to get into, somebody asked, and I felt like it was important because I did touch on it in my episode with Wendy, but it was, did your mom ever apologize for... No, it's not that deep, I don't think, but for how she dealt with the diet culture or the like you being an overweight child.
So what's there to apologize for?
Well, first of all, I don't feel like I'm owed an apology, mm-hmm. although you have, actually, to be honest. But I don't know if it was for pushing children, like a child, into like a diet or like a weight loss thing, or making that like, I don't know, highlighting it. But personally, so to answer the question first before you do, I don't feel like if you have started understanding where somebody's coming from, that you necessarily owe them an apology or that you're owed an apology. So at first it was very jarring, just because for me, I thought I associated it with her not liking how I looked. And as I grew up and realized that, like, well, also because I think you communicated it, my mom's a doctor, as she said before. So for her, it was very much just a thing of having seen patients, young patients in their like early 20s, even dealing with diabetes and hypertension and, you know, just those kind of things, and going, like, if you don't nip something in the bud, it can go out of control type of thing. So I think finally understanding where you were coming from, and also sometimes people operate from their own insecurities or their own fears, and then kind of project that onto their children. But just the main thing for me, understanding you as a healthcare worker and how obsessed you were with that and vitality and having a long, healthy life and not seeing your children suffer or die early or things like that. Because even with, I mean, she's as intense with smoking, but for some reason it was only really felt personal and hurtful when it came to weight, because that was something that I couldn't personally change in a hurry.
But also with drinking, with smoking, it was touching something internal to you.
Yeah. So which also came from other people.
Yes, from external. Yeah. So for me,
but I don't feel like I'm
even today. I do have people who have kids who struggle with weight asking me. Maybe because I'm a doctor, but maybe because they think I have some experience. First and foremost, I don't know if there's one right way of responding. I don't know. I think as parents, like you are saying, sometimes we project our own insecurities. Sometimes we let our ego get in the way. Because, of course, there is something about, oh, what kind of a mother is she if she lets her kids be either too thin or big or whatever. Mm. So there is an ego thing there. That's the first confession to make. But the second thing is, I could see how you were struggling with it in terms of the bullying, in terms, even when we'd go shopping, you'd suddenly don't want to buy clothes because everything you try, you wouldn't find your size and you know. So as a mom, as they say, as a mom, having children, it's like your nerves are exposed and they're raw. It's like your heart has been taken out of you. And so every pain your child feels is like 100 times more on you. So I would see that. And in fact, at some point, you really loved to dance. And, you know, I could see the bullying. And so I just wanted to take that away from you. So that was the main inspiration. It's just, if I can just take it away from her and just not have her have to go through that. So that was the main consideration. And then secondary to that is the fact that, of course, I'm a doctor. I understand insulin resistance. I understand pre-diabetes. I understand all those things. So as you can see, I'm committed to my own well-being and vitality. I exercise, I try to eat right, and so on and so on. So it's something I would have wanted to teach. So maybe trying to go back and thinking about how would I deal with it today. I still don't know whether I would do it differently. I still don't have the magic wand. I don't know if I would do it differently. But we've spoken about this, and I've said sorry if that made you feel diminished or insecure and reduced your self-esteem and your self-confidence. You want to know that when your child walks in, they know that your eyes light up because you really, really love your child. You do anything to protect them. So if anything you do makes them feel anything other than that, of course, I would want you to know that. I'm sorry for that.
Thanks, hold on. Okay. Next question. Let's go to positive now. I can't do this anymore. What are the top three things she set out for herself as a parent that she feels she got right?
Top three things that I set out
for. I mean, it doesn't have to be three, but like any things that you set out for yourself.
No, the
that
first
you felt
is,
like you got right.
The first is giving birth to amazing girls, daughters who are just on. I mean, I know that they are on their way to being very successful, and whatever their definition of success is, I see it, I feel it, I know it, because I talk to you guys. I know how well screwed on your heads are. I know that you've got dreams for yourselves. They are big, they are bold, they are audacious, but you also have the courage to at least try. So that, to me, I would say is the one thing I'm so happy I got right.
And I don't even want to go into the wrongs, but anyway, so do you have any tips for mothers on how to get, I don't know why they'd ask this, but confident, especially black children, black girl children in this country or in this world, on how to raise that type of...
I mean, the first is of course, like I said, when I was much younger, I was not even mindful of the things I was thinking about myself, of the things I was saying. So first is to be just mindful of what you are thinking about yourself and what you are communicating about yourself. So it's words are powerful, thoughts are powerful. So just be mindful of what you say and what you collude with, because of course the world is telling you you are less than.
Yeah.
It tries to diminish you. Don't collude with the world. Don't. Just understand that you have value, you have a purpose. Actually, also, our value is not linked to how productive we are.
Mm.
Our value is just because we are, you know, we are human beings, so we have innate value, inherent value. It's not linked to our productivity or our success or whatever. So it's to first understand that and to just catch the thoughts that are contrary to that.
Yeah.
And then the second one is to just allow people to make mistakes. Firstly, as a mom, make mistakes, try new things, fail, try again. You know, just model the behavior you want your children to learn.
Mm.
You know, if you are a perfectionist, then you only do things just because you're good at them. You are telling the kids that mistakes are not allowed, that only perfectionism is allowed in this house. So you have to try, you have to do things, you have to fail, and you have to be vulnerable and try again until you succeed. So for me, it's less what you say and more how you model the behavior that you want your kids to emulate and learn.
Okay, so now we're getting to the final bits, but before the last question, what is something that you had to accept about each other that you struggled with at first? Do you want to go first or should I go first?
You go first.
I think I would say the control thing, just because I've had to accept it. It's not going anywhere. it's changing, but it's not going. And I think I also, because I know that my own anxieties show up sometimes and make me want to hold on tightly to planning or organizing.
Planning and organizing, it does have a dark side, I agree. But also, it's got a side that works for us.
So. For sure, but I'm saying if now it's controlling means I feel like sometimes with other people rather than yourself.
Okay.
So that for me is what I've had to accept. But I'm trying. Mm. it's a daily task, but I'm trying, and also trying to be empathetic as to the reasons why. Yeah, what's your answer? What have you struggled to accept
that you will not accept that some of the decisions and choices you will make are not what I would.
Mm.
I've had to accept that and just trust that your path and your journey is as unique as you are, and that things will work out in the end. I mean, there are, for instance, you've got tattoos all over. It's not something I understand.
Okay.
I don't get that, but I also have to accept.
Well, good on you, because you've never made me feel that way.
You are unique. you've got your own life to lead, and you've got your own lessons to learn.
I low-key thought you liked them.
And number two, you smoke.
Jesus Christ!
So, I'm talking about the choices,
girl.
So I think what I've had to learn is that your path is your path, and you will learn the lessons that you need to learn, that you will figure it out. I actually do trust that you will figure it out, because you are very wise, you are very thoughtful, you are very considerate. You are much as people would think that you're actually quite organized, you are thoughtful, you are considerate, you are wise. So I've had to just take a step back and trust that you will figure it out.
Okay, so now, actually this is the second last question, but how do you balance being my friend and my mom?
Like, I'm not, for instance, your friend. Actually, I'm not your
friend. No, I agree. I also feel like people want everybody to be everything. Mm. I think you're definitely my mom, mm-hmm. because, for instance, we do have a glass of wine or something together, but when I have a Jägerbaum, it's not taken very nicely. You know, some of the decisions I make, like I said, you know, she's not that happy. So we're not like ride or die buddies. And so when I have friends and she has friends, but we have a great mother and daughter relationship. And I don't think you have to bring friendship into...
It's a great mother and daughter relationship.
But it's definitely mother and daughter, for sure. But what do you think of my Instagram stories and like the sex stuff? Is that ever like...
I mean, in the beginning it was like, ooh, but I've had to accept, not just accept, celebrate that you are... You've always been quite vocal. You are, even before Instagram, you had views about, because you read a lot and you think about things a lot. You've got views. Sometimes some of your views, you've educated me a lot as well about whether it's my homophobia, it's my even patriarchy and you know, all those sexism, because I mean, there's a lot of things we internalize, even racism that we've internalized. I've learned a lot from you, from just how you view things and how you have strong views about things. So, what was the question?
On my Instagram, well,
the sex stuff, like, even just talking about sex, why is it, I mean, in the beginning it was a little bit uncomfortable, but I also had to ask myself, why am I finding it so uncomfortable? It's such a natural thing that everybody does, and why is it uncomfortable to talk about it? So I don't,
especially because you did take me to a sex shop. So if I can take me to a sex shop, I can talk about it, surely.
Yes, did I take it to a sex shop?
Yes, you did, sweetie. The first time, I don't know, but like we also went to in Cape Town like last year.
Yes, you were 30.
Yeah,
come
but
on.
I think the first time I was not 30. It was like, okay. It was, I had a long distance boyfriend, and you were like, we gotta get stuff to make us trip here with.
I don't even remember that.
You did.
But I
the first time I went was with you, and it was actually great because it was like demystifying this thing.
I grew up a Catholic girl, so I do know that I had some not so enlightened ideas around sex.
Yeah.
So I do think that it's something that I had to learn along the way. So I have no issue. I don't have, I wouldn't share some of the things you share about on Instagram. That's not my portion, but it is yours, and you're doing a good job.
Thanks, babes. Okay, the last question is, what is your favorite thing about me and our relationship? And vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, what is my favorite thing about you and our relationship? Would you like me to start?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we've covered it in this episode, but my favorite thing about our relationship is how much we laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I think you are, if anyone, I wish I could put a mic in our house sometimes, because I think you are the funniest person in the family, maybe in the country, and potentially top 10 in the world.
Yeah.
No, you are funny as hell. So I think the best thing is how much we laugh together and how much fun we have. Like when we travel, I mean, I have fun with my friends as well, but you're one of my favorite travel buddies. We have so much in common. We love jazz. We love salsa. We love the finer things in life. We love restaurants with a view. We love tall dark men. Oh my gosh. So we just have a lot in common, and I think we have a lot of fun together. And my favorite thing about you is just how open you are. But also, you're such a safe space. You're very spiritual, but you're just very... a safe space, and you're always like, I always know you're praying for us more than you're praying for yourself. I know that we are the living embodiment, like I said before, of your prayers, and you make us feel loved every day. You're not the most physically affectionate person in the world, but you definitely make up for it with how with your words, with your kindness, with your presence. And you are there for everything. Like you said, some things are uncomfortable, but you'll share and support and make the aunties watch. And I just can go on and on about you. I think everything is my favorite thing. I love you so much. It's crazy. Think about it.
All right. I love you too. But my favorite thing about you is just how bold you are. I mean, to put yourself out there every day for the whole world to, I could never do it. I know for sure I could never do it. And of course, sometimes the comments and the nastiness gets to you, but the following day you're back at it and you've got such a sunny disposition. You are optimistic, hopeful. You are out there creating something, going into uncharted territory and just figuring it out. So I think you make Fence and us and me braver. Fence always says that we get to do things we wouldn't do, because, I mean, as you look at us, we are quite corporate. We are quite, you know, so you make us
the twins.
Yeah. You challenge us to do things that we wouldn't do. You are bold. You live your life loud. You love loud. So yeah, that's what I love about you.
Thanks, mommy. Well, we've had a very amazing episode today. Oh, thank you. Oh, fuck, okay. Get professional. All right, thank
you.
You
have to put that spice in there.
I will. I don't like to edit anymore because I think it takes out the organicness of the episode. But anyway, thank you so much for making time. I know this was quite nerve-wracking for you because, again, you don't really like to put yourself out there, and I kind of dragged you here. But I love you. Thank you for always supporting me. Yeah, I'm going to stop there because I can't.
Anyway, and guys, I'm so proud of you and your podcast. I know that it's breaking some records. It's another thing that you're doing, and everything you do seems to turn into gold. So I have every expectation that you'll do amazing things.
Okay. And with that, thank you for joining this episode. Oh my God. Thank you for joining this episode. Good night.
Cheers.
Convos and Cocktails, produced in partnership with Nasucha Tladi and WMG Rep. Drinks never end at the bar. So join me over at the socials with your cocktail, where we get to continue the conversations. Simply follow me at Nasucha Tladi. See you there. Recorded at Solid Gold Podcast. Solid Gold. To be understood, you must first be heard. I look forward to our next Convos and Cocktails, and don't forget, mo money, mojito, or whatever Biggie said.